Paramount, a Viacom company. 90th anniversary. Paramount Pictures presents a Mies Neufeld production. Ben Affleck, Morgan Freeman, The Sum of All Fears. A heavy bomb-shaped object is rolled through a storage hangar past stacks of aerial missiles. The hangar door opens, revealing a modern fighter bomber parked outside. In 1973, Egypt and Syria launched a surprise attack against Israel. By day two, Israeli ground forces appeared on the verge of defeat. In the event that their ground forces were overrun, an Israeli A-4 jet took off on patrol with one nuclear bomb. As the bomb is rolled beneath the waiting jet, a red sun hangs above the horizon. Soon, the aircraft's taking off. James Cromwell, Liev Schreiber, Bridget Moynihan, Alan Bates. The jet soars upwards and immediately banks to the left. It speeds over a vast stretch of desert. Now, silhouetted against the low morning sun, three ground-to-air missiles aimed skywards. A radar operator studies a blip on his screen. The Israeli jet flies low, its pilot scanning the desert around him and the mountains quickly approaching up ahead. He glances at a photograph of his wife and child, just as some turbulence makes his plane judder. The photo falls from his instrument panel and he leans down to retrieve it. Looking up, he sees a missile contrail snaking towards him. With no time to evade it, the missile strikes the jet and it explodes into a thousand pieces. Black smoke drifts up from the crash site between low hills in the desert. Small fires burn amidst pieces of debris scattered across the sand. A scorpion scuttles past the photograph of the pilot's family. Music by Jerry Goldsmith. Half buried deep in a crater it's gouged in the ground is the nuclear bomb. The wind whips up dust clouds around it. Overhead, the sun is arching back towards the horizon as the plane wreckage is obscured and eventually hidden by the swirling sands. Executive producers, Tom Clancy and Stratton Leopold. Based on the novel by Tom Clancy. Produced by Mies Neufeld. Screenplay by Paul Attanasio and Daniel Pine. Directed by Phil Alden Robinson. 29 years later. Zooming in from orbit on a section of tree-lined road, four black vehicles driving in convoy take a sharp corner together. They're ushered past a guarded area by two uniformed men who close a gate behind the swiftly moving convoy. Mount Weather, Virginia, USA.
Sure it's the Russians?
100%, sir.
Submarine launched 12 to 15 megatons and they went to strike status 15 minutes prior.
Sinkland reports that Roosevelt splashed 6 incoming cruise missiles.
The Russians are moving west through Poland. If they head for Germany, we've got the Berlin Brigade, but they're outnumbered.
Sir, we've got another launch, this one from Alyeska, Central Russia.
What the hell is an
Alyeska? SS-18 ICBMs. Probably targets New York, Washington, here.
How good is the ceiling?
Anything but a direct hit.
Satellites confirm birds in the air. Multiple launches. First impact estimated 25 minutes.
How do we know that's accurate?
It's accurate.
Sir, I advise we go to DEFCON 1.
Get President Zorkin on the hotline.
Zorkin is missing, sir. We have reports of a coup in Moscow. General Bulgakov is calling the shots now.
Who the hell is Bulgakov?
The asshole who wanted to use nukes in Chechnya.
With grave expressions, the men take a seat at a long table. The president stares downwards as his cabinet look at him expectantly.
Sir, DEFCON 1, we're out of time.
The president looks up at an advisor who nods.
Do it.
Mr. President. Sir, it'll take about a minute for the launch sequence to process after you give the order. Before the order can be taken, an ID check must be performed.
My ID number is 5th from the top.
A young woman approaches the president.
Sir, it's your wife on 2104.
Yeah. Under the two-man rule, the order must be confirmed by someone on the approved list.
Oh, shit. Gene Revell, National Security Advisor, 2nd from the top.
Is it black tie?
Okay, I'm on my way. Can we finish this up some other time?
No.
We gotta update these fire drills, Billy. I mean, if the shit ever hits the fan, I'm not going underground. This place is a goddamn tomb down there.
You also have to choose someone else to face off against besides the Russians all the time.
Really? Let's see. Who else has 27,000 nukes for us to worry about?
It's the guy with one I'm worried about.
Speaking of Russia, I have to send some folks over there. Inspect their nuclear decommissioning facility. A place called Armazaz.
Armazaz?
Yeah, whatever. Just think someone from your staff should be on the trip.
I'll go.
Billy, send staff.
I want to go.
Okay. And don't underestimate Zorkin, pal. Between his economy, crime, Chechnya,
his liver,
what's left of it. How is he, by the way?
So he scheduled a press conference for this afternoon, so at least we know he can sit up.
Why not negotiate?
The interview is over.
Chechnya часть России.
Chechnya is part of
Russia. И в смысле на Западе, которые желают раскола.
It is only criminals and their friends in the West who wish it to be separate.
But, Mr. President, if you would kindly come back, we do have a few more questions that we would like to ask.
You guys see what I see?
How's Jack?
Yeah, he used to be able to button it all the way up. He's getting fat.
I know how he feels. Oh, wow. Look at that.
Maybe it's not the same jacket.
No. Yeah. One with the shiny sleeves he wore the last time he got out of the hospital.
He's definitely off the diet.
He's also off the wagon. You hear how he slurred Lanziti in Russia?
That must be why Chelinsky's hanging around. Keep him off the sauce.
Where's Chelinsky?
Next to... What's her name? The chick with the brown hair.
Elena Rishkov.
No, that is not Chelinsky.
This is busted. It's Chelinsky.
No, you're thinking Trapitsky.
No, I'm not.
It ain't Trapitsky either.
I know. It's Chelinsky.
No, it's not. Believe, trust me.
Look, he is standing next to Elena Rishkov. He was banging her at the Geneva summit.
Chelinsky was not at Geneva. Trapitsky was at Geneva.
So, what are you saying? Trapitsky was banging Elena Rishkov?
I'm just saying Zorkin's putting on weight, really. I don't know why you guys have to reduce everything to sex. It's just disgusting.
Oh, I know. What's wrong? I agree. Write it up. And if he is putting on weight, that might have health consequences. So be sure and get it in the afternoon brief. Oh, and somebody find out who is banging Elena Rishkov. This is good.
So what shall we make of Chechnya asking the West for protection? She is like a beautiful virgin, escaping the clutches of a lecherous bear and running to Bill Clinton to save her maidenhood. A poet once wrote, "Meet the new boss, same as the old boss." He could have been writing of us, of Europe in the 21st century. Over 50 years of America and Russia imposing their will on the European community, East and West. And we are still treated like children, but without the toys or the goodnight chocolates. Each day we lose a little bit more of our separate, sovereign ability to determine our own futures. And each day the world comes just a little bit closer to that terrible moment when the beating of a butterfly's wings unleashes a hurricane God himself cannot stop.
A hilly desert location. Near an encampment, a large pile of sand is being added to as a man digs a deep hole. A short distance away, mounds of stones mark several crude graves. When his spade strikes something metallic, the gravedigger stops to brush sand away from the bottom of the hole. He uncovers the tail fin of the nuclear bomb. So what is it?
Are you blind? It's a bomb.
Where's the fuse?
Where's the fuse? The young man, Ghazi, slides his hand behind a damaged panel.
It's warm.
So am I. Come on, I don't have all night. Ghazi picks up a lamp and climbs a ladder out of the pit. The gravedigger sitting in the back of a truck, which is backed up to the hole. The truck has a small crane attached, and the gravedigger operates it, lifting the bomb out of the hole. The bomb slips from its support line and crashes onto the ground beside the truck. Both men look anxious.
It's a dud!
Let's get it onto the truck.
But how can we sell it?
There's always someone who'll buy this crap. Now, the Kremlin.
Enough of this. I can't stand all these questions about my health. I am to be described as robust and healthy.
The Russian premier suddenly falls flat on his back. The young CIA analyst, Jack Ryan, awakes in his bed.
Is that yours or mine?
Well, it must be yours. Mine's just a shell.
As the young woman next to him leans over him to grab the pager, Ryan kisses her head.
It's not the hospital.
Hi.
You're still here?
Well, I think to be accurate and everything, it's actually you who's still here.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Not that I'm complaining.
Jack, I know this is new and all, but I have something I have to say or I'm going to explode. I don't want you to be scared.
What?
She sits up.
You're in love with me. Jack, I'm a medical professional. I can read the symptoms. You're definitely in love with me.
And that scares you?
Not even a little. But I think it scares you.
No, not even a little. And for the record, you're the one who brought it up.
They kiss some more.
Forget it. Oh, wait, it'll stop.
I don't know what this is.
Just go about your business.
Timing sucks.
Do what you have to do. I totally understand.
Yes, this is Dr. Muller. No. Muller, you paged me? Oh.
Hello?
Stop.
Yes, this is Jack Ryan.
Jesus.
Okay, I'll be there in half an hour. I gotta go. I have an emergency at work. I have to run. I'm sorry.
Kathy, yeah. How about dinner tonight?
Yeah.
How about tomorrow night?
Jack, I said yes to tonight.
I know.
What kind of emergency does a historian have?
He died at 0420 Zulu. 8.5 hours later, they swore in a new president. Now everybody wants to know who this new guy is.
Who is he?
Alexander Nimrod.
You're kidding me. I wrote a paper about him a year ago.
I know.
Oh, Mary Pat, I said he could be next. I said he would be the next guy. I predicted
know.
This.
I know.
And nobody read it.
Yeah, well, you're reading it now, buddy.
Who?
Cabot.
I've been here 14 months. I don't think he knows what I look like.
Cabot suddenly appears.
Are you Ryan?
Yes, sir.
What is this, a paper chase?
Ryan's not wearing a tie.
What's your advice?
Well, come on, we're late.
Ryan follows Cabot through an operations center.
You're about to breathe air that's way over your pay grade, so listen up. You're going to be asked for analysis and advice. I'll be goddamn sure you know what you're talking about before you give it. Don't be afraid to say you don't know. And choose your words carefully. Always have a habit of being turned into policy. Hey, you. Give me your coat. Come on, you'll get back.
The man quickly takes his coat off and hands it to Ryan.
Tie.
So, intelligence committee? I've watched these on C-SPAN. Never actually been to one.
You never watched one of these on C-SPAN.
Uniformed guards open wooden doors, allowing Ryan, Cabot, and two other people entry to a busy glass-walled room beyond.
But our most important assessment comes from a highly placed source inside the Kremlin. In his opinion, Nemiroff does not owe his ascension to the military.
Everyone has opinions, Mr. Cabot. I respect that. This morning, my wife woke up and said that I was old, bald, and ugly.
Is that a question, Mr. Chairman?
I told her appearances aren't everything. Would you agree, Mr. Cabot?
I certainly would, sir.
Now this new fellow, Nesmaraz, is that his name?
Nemiroff, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, despite what your source says, we hear that Nesmaraz is a hardliner. Is he a hardliner?
No. It's a bit too soon to make that assessment, sir.
Well, according to CNN, your Mr. Nesmaraz is making promises to rebuild the Russian Empire. That sounds pretty rash from where I sit. If I were sitting in Chechnya, I'd be even more worried.
Sir, Nemiroff just saying what he needs to say to get the hardliners off his back. If we leave him alone, Russia will stabilize. If we push him, all bets are over.
When I asked for your advice, I didn't mean that you should actually speak.
Mr. Cabot.
Mr. Chairman, some of our assets in the Russian government who actually know Mr. Nemiroff have not had a chance to report in. I'd like to take a couple of days and gather more information for you before characterizing him. But I do maintain my opinion that appearances can be deceiving.
You're saying I'm wrong?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. I don't think you're ugly.
I was out of line back there. I apologize.
Senators don't like to be surprised. I always give them a hint of what it is I want to tell them. Then I give them a little while to get used to it. Then I tell them.
I understand.
Good.
But I'm right about Nemiroff.
Your girlfriend like this stubborn speak in you?
What?
Kathy Muller, second-year surgical resident, Baltimore Memorial Hospital. Welcome to the CIA, sport.
Well, your intelligence is a little flawed in this matter. I wouldn't call her my girlfriend yet.
What exactly would you call her?
Great. Amazing.
She's just afraid to commit.
He's terrified of commitment. A man is afraid of commitment after 3 dates? Alert the media.
I know.
So what does he do?
He was in the Marines before he hurt his back. Now he's an historian.
Yon?
No. Works for a think tank across the river.
Double yon.
All right, Rita. We'll see what you have to say after we meet him tonight. He's,
cute.
I have fat fingers.
Kathy? Cute scale, 1 to 10.
Oh, God. I don't know. 12.
The nuclear bombs unveiled in a tent.
Ask them where they found this.
Fil Ardi. Fil Jolan. In the field. In the Golan.
There was quite a lot of fighting there in 1973. They witness it.
كان في كتير حروبات هون ب73.
ما ابني في الحرب.
This one says he lost his son.
Does he remember? Was there a plane shot down?
انت بتتذكر اذا شفت طياره انضربت بالنار ووقعت؟
نعم، طياره حربيه اسرائيلي سقطت.
Yes, an Israeli jet destroyed.
A bald-headed man's been examining the bomb by lamplight. He moves past a partition to speak to the others.
This is worthless.
هاي بالأسف ما إله قيمة.
But tell him, I will give him $400 because of his son.
بس رح نعطيك $400 تعويض عن ابنك.
Pleased by this, the gravedigger smiles.
Thank you. Thank you.
Gosh, it's all sort of thing you find lying around normally.
Absolutely not.
How did you come by it then?
I found her in the attic of an old mansion house in an old part of Glasgow.
All right.
The bald-headed man, Olsen, is looking pleased with himself as he smokes a cigarette, watching a television set. He puts the cigarette down and sits forward. He begins tapping at a computer in front of him. He types, found what you seek, request $50 million US, vintage 1973, Israeli made, 12 type fission bomb. Smiling, he presses enter.
In fact, what I thought I'd found was a garden ornament.
The message is received by the bearded lecturer. On board a small passenger jet, Ryan's making a call.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi, so glad you called. I'm running a little late. I'm sorry. Can you come like a half an hour later?
I can't make it. I'm really sorry.
Oh.
It's a last minute work thing.
What's that noise?
I'm calling from a plane. Look, this just came up and I tried to call you at the hospital, but they...
Where are you going?
I can't tell you that.
Jack.
You can't tell me where you're going?
Jack.
Hold on 1 second. Yes, sir.
What are you doing?
Oh, I had a date tonight, so I had to call and cancel.
Well, don't be stupid. Tell her where you're going. In fact, tell her who you work for. She'll be impressed.
Okay, I work for the CIA, and the director asked me at the last minute to come with him to Russia to do a nuclear arms inspection. Hello?
That is so lame.
Oh, Kathy, I swear, it's because of the START treaty. We get to inspect to make sure they're really decommissioning their nuclear arsenal.
She hangs up.
Hello? Hello? Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Broken sheets of ice float on the river in the Russian capital. Three black cars drive over a shallow carpet of snow on their way to the Kremlin buildings. A soldier salutes them as they pass. An official escorts Caput and his party along a plush hallway. At the other end, a man with his back to them sits on a stool being photographed.
Здравствуйте, William Caput.
President Nemirov?
Nemirov stands, turns, and walks towards the Americans. Caput goes to shake his hand.
Pleasure, sir. May I present Mrs. Lathrop?
Mr. President.
General Rand.
Mr. President.
And Dr. Ryan.
Mr. President.
You must be the Dr. Ryan who has done such interesting research on me. You should not be surprised by this. We know quite a bit. For instance, we know how wrong you were in your report that I had many girlfriends in college. На самом деле, после того, как я встретил свою жену на третьем курсе, я ни разу не посмотрел на другую женщину.
I met my wife in my third year and have not looked at another woman since. I was referring to the first 2 years. Sir.
Where you received highest honors in English.
I like you.
Well, in that case, so do I. First, let me apologize for interjecting myself in your inspection tour.
But there is a message I wish for you to take back to President Fowler.
Well, you could just call him on the phone.
I would like him to hear it from you, his friend of many years, who received it personally from me, saw my expression and the language of my body as I spoke it.
I understand. Chechnya is an internal affair. What we do there should be none of your concern.
I will relay the message, but I don't think he will agree.
There are those in my country who would use this issue to weaken me.
There are those in my country who say your war in Chechnya is exactly your weakness.
Chechnya is a nation of criminals. Every day brings another cowardly attack on innocent Russian citizens. It is none of your concern.
Stability is our concern. Peace in Chechnya is our concern. And, if I may speak frankly, your control over your military concerns us too.
Coldly, Nemirov stares at Caput.
For you to get involved here, it's like sleeping with another man's wife. And what you're suggesting is that afterward, they can all live together under the same roof. But what really happens is the betrayed husband buys a gun.
Nemirov walks away. Caput rejoins Ryan.
That went well.
Who's the guy with Nemirov?
Anatoly Grushkov.
Old KGB?
Been lurking around since Brezhnev. Plays all sides and nobody's had the guts to get rid of him.
Is that because he knows where all the bodies are buried?
Probably because he buried him himself.
The Americans' three-car convoy drives along an icy stretch of road in a flat, desolate region.
And we were able to obtain a roster of their scientists at Arzamas. Who's who, what their expertise is.
Ryan takes the report from his colleague. Caput sitting up front, staring at the road ahead as the cars drive on through a white, featureless landscape. The cars pull into a snow-covered compound. Accompanied by a high-ranking soldier, the Americans get out and approach a large building, the doors of which are opened for their benefit.
Arzamas 16th is home to the All-Russian Scientific Research Institute of Experimental Physics and is the birthplace of our first atomic bomb. Many of our greatest scientists worked here, and many still do. Since 1995.
Caput watches a torpedo-shaped bomb being lowered from the ceiling.
But this is the first
We tried so hard to get in here over the years. I sent three people. They all died trying.
Ryan stares at him, then follows Cabot as he walks off to rejoin the others. A man pushes a missile nose cone on a trolley through a work area as two scientists in white clothing carefully remove one large metal cylinder from inside another.
What's the t-shirt say?
I'm a bomb technician. If you see me running, try to catch up.
Cabot smiles humorlessly.
Okay.
Sir? I'm sorry, just one quick thing. I'm sure it's nothing. According to this, there are 17 senior scientists on duty today. I only count 14. Doctors Milanov, Orloff, and Spassky. They don't seem to be here.
I will make your inquiries.
Dr. Milanov is out sick. Orloff is on vacation. Spassky, I am grieved to say, was killed. Driving his car to work just this past week.
We move on, shall we?
Please. Very impressive. You almost seem to have that information memorized.
I assumed you would ask, Dr. Ryan.
Haifa, Israel. A large wooden crate is being lifted on ropes by a crane and loaded onto a ship. Olsen watches the operation, then walks off, smiling contentedly. The small jet is cruising through the darkening sky. Inside.
Okay. We touched down at Andrew, the 2130. Tell him to meet me there.
Sir, there's three missing scientists. Milanov's expertise is detonators. Spassky's expertise is the package, the nuclear core itself. And Orlov is a mathematician whose expertise is the geometry of high explosives inside a fission bomb.
Exact three men you would need if you wanted to build a bomb.
Rushkov would have us build
the... Rushkov's a liar. Milanov is not sick. Orlov hasn't taken a vacation in years, and Spassky was supposed to die driving a car. Doesn't drive. They have no idea where these guys are.
I'm dying to ask you how you know that.
Cabot turns his open laptop round to show Ryan.
Secure source inside the Kremlin. Code name, Spinnaker. He gives me stuff, I give him stuff. We keep the back channels open in hopes of staving off disaster. Oh, and speaking of disaster, did you call your girlfriend yet?
No. I haven't figured out how I'm gonna dig myself out of this one.
All right, listen. Call her up and invite her to the White House Correspondents' Dinner Sunday night. It's the hottest ticket in town. She'll love it.
Sounds great. How do I get in?
Trust me.
A man is waiting in the dark and the rain as Cabot and Ryan leave the plane. Ryan huddles under Cabot's black umbrella at the foot of the steps.
I'll see you at the car.
Ryan nods and rushes off, pulling up the collar of his coat. Under his broad umbrella, Cabot walks calmly over to the waiting man.
Still loving your desk job?
Yeah, I am.
How's your Russian?
Still works. Why?
Three Russian nuclear scientists are missing. I need to know where they are.
The man, John Clark, looks away, a little concerned.
I thought I wasn't doing this anymore.
I just need information this time, Johnny. Your orders are on the plane. Wheels up at 2330. Have a nice flight.
He watches Cabot stride away towards parked cars.
Sunday night, 8 o'clock at the Hilton. The tickets are under the name of John Clark. You do have a tux.
Yeah, yes, sir.
President Fowler.
My beautiful wife, Julie, is from New Jersey.
15 electoral votes. And is, as you know, half Jewish, so we'll take Florida's 25 electoral votes and divide by two.
This is a nice hotel.
My daughter, Jeannie,
yeah, it's beautiful. Is
her My friend Rita stayed here once. She said it was
it's a girl. She will be named
nice.
Virginia. 13 electoral votes.
Maybe after dinner, Virginia.
In fact, even if it's a boy, he'll be named Virginia.
You get it in there.
I already did.
She reminds me that I have publicly acknowledged that as a young Marine officer in Vietnam, I did, on a handful of occasions, smoke marijuana. California, 54 electoral votes.
A serious-looking woman hands Fowler a small piece of paper. Mobiles belonging to various men at the gathering start ringing, and they begin rising from their seats. Fowler is consulted at the podium, and then is ushered away, while everyone else looks around in bewilderment. Ryan gets up, kisses Kathy on the cheek, and goes. A glass of red wine on a table falls over and shatters.
At approximately 0600 Moscow time, the Russians launched a massive artillery strike against Grozny, the capital of Chechnya. The shells contain an experimental chemical weapon known as the Novichok binary nerve agent. Saturation, you can see it on those infrared sat photos, took 20 minutes, after which every man, woman, and child inside a radius of roughly 12 miles was rendered helpless by symptoms approximating acute, late-stage cerebral palsy.
Oh, my God.
How many dead?
Best guess, 80%.
Which means Nemirov just launched the most massive attack in the history of chemical warfare.
Let's talk response.
The worst thing we could do is nothing.
I agree. If you let him get away with chemical weapons, what's next? Biological? Nuclear?
Okay. Short of gassing the Kremlin, what's the strongest response we can make?
We send in peacekeepers.
Chechnya's not sovereign.
Look, they requested recognition, so we recognize them. Not full diplomatic recognition, provisional. Then we get the Chechens to request emergency international assistance and we send in peacekeepers.
How do you get them in there?
The fastest way would be to fly them in from Turkey. Over Armenian airspace?
To screw Russia, they won't complain.
Let's do it. Nemirov can choke on it. Bill?
Dr. Ryan.
Yes, sir.
What do you think?
Everyone's looking at Ryan.
Mr. President, conventional wisdom would suggest that Nemirov is playing the traditional Russian role. Be aggressive, flex your muscles, dare the world to stop you. But Nemirov isn't conventional.
He walks like a hardliner, he talks like a hardliner.
Yes, sir, but with all due respect, I don't think he is one.
He just gassed the capital of another country, Doctor. With all due respect, you're wrong.
So what are we wasting our time for?
What if Nemirov didn't order the attack? What if it was a rogue general or a splinter military unit frustrated they couldn't get the rest of the rebels out of the city?
Have you any reason to believe he didn't order it, or are you just floating this?
You don't know.
Ryan looks uneasy.
I don't think he did it, sir. I would bet he didn't do it.
If I could ask senior staff to remain behind for a few minutes, please.
Others get up and leave. Cabot is sitting with a hand to his forehead. Ryan walks out of the room along with the others leaving and pauses as the wood-paneled door to the room is closed. He wanders back to the dining area, which is all but deserted. He sits down at one of the tables and notices Nemirov on a TV.
Excuse me, sir. Would you mind turning that up just a little bit?
A waiter obliges.
Katze Katzov.
Finally. Every nation has a right to defend itself. This terrorism must end.
Bombardarovka Chechny.
The bombing of Chechnya.
By your decision.
Was my decision.
A woman pats Ryan on the shoulder.
Nice going, Ace.
Nemirov and Grishkov step into a lift. Nemirov prevents other aides from entering. Who did it?
General Pildish, General Mitkin, unhappy old communists.
Bastards. Relieve them of command.
I will shoot them myself.
Just make them disappear. Their execution would tell the world I wasn't in control. These days, better to appear guilty than impotent.
And how is our Russian friend affected by this?
I am not affected. I remain devoted to our little plan.
That's what you're charging us. I am not surprised.
And the American?
Mr. Misson is a believer. I put a little extra in the escrow account for him.
Why?
Because he won't live long enough to receive it.
Where is the package?
It left Haifa a week ago.
A cigarette.
I'm told these things can kill you.
Je vous prie de m'excuser, but so much has changed. Perhaps the new situation suggests we consider a different approach. Maybe try to bring Russia more into Europe, more into our way of thinking.
We have discussed that, Monsieur Monceau. And with your concurrence, rejected it.
Oh, perhaps we were hasty. Perhaps our plan is...
Is what?
Oh, not perfectly conceived.
Bist du verrückt?
Are you crazy? All over the world, right-wing parties, nationalist movements, Nazis, Aryan nations, all working together for the first time. Isn't that perfect? Everyone turns to their nervous-looking associate.
Well, I respect the will and judgment of my friends. But in light of the week's events, I am grown uncomfortable with this plan. So I must beg your leave.
He gets up.
Gentlemen.
He heads for the door.
Herr Haft will help you out.
Haft helps the man on with his coat.
Yes.
Haft strangles him with his scarf. The others show little emotion. Baltimore, Maryland.
Watch it with that thing, you're gonna kill someone.
At the docks. The driver of a forklift truck parks in a warehouse, throws down his cigarette, and walks to a door, passing a shower of sparks from someone welding. He hurries through a clothing storage area, taking off his coat.
Yo, what's up, Mason? You know, I always wanted to ask you, where'd you get that tat, man?
Navy.
Navy? I was in the Navy. Hospital ship, 6 years. You?
8 months.
Oh, you wash out.
Mason looks up at him slowly from a desk and computer.
All right, brother. You have a good one.
The man goes.
Yeah, brother.
Mason turns back to the computer screen. An email from a German account simply reads, "The day has arrived. Thank you." Nemirov to his wife.
The attack is not...
I expected this.
Really? What will you do?
Don't worry. Don't worry. We'll do nothing.
These are 4 hours old Russian 12th, 15th, and 2nd tank regiments.
They haven't moved. Why haven't they moved?
Nemirov's too smart to move those tanks.
He speaks.
Jack, look. Nemirov's got like, what, 19,000 tanks? No way NATO can match that.
Well, that's why he's not going to move them. It's like a chess game. He's just thinking three moves ahead. He knows he has so many more tanks than we do. The NATO playbook says the only way we can stop him is using tactical nuclear weapons.
And there's no way he wants to risk a nuclear war over this.
I also think he's sending us a message. He didn't bomb Grozny.
Arzamas 16, Russia. Clark arrives.
Извините.
Excuse me. I'm looking for Mrs. Spassky.
At the end of the corridor.
I've not seen Sasha since university.
You were his teaching assistant?
Yes.
Strange, I don't remember you.
When he heard I was in Arzamas, he asked me to call on you.
Thank you.
No trouble.
He says he'll take me to the West.
That would cost a lot.
The fools here pay him nothing, but that doesn't mean others won't. He has a secret job.
For the government?
For fools with money. Same old nonsense. Do this, don't do that, don't call your mother.
Pigs.
I could die any day, and he can't phone his mother. But my Sasha, he called last night.
Clark grins.
Clark got us her number. NSA was able to collect records of all calls made to that number last night and trace it back to here. It's an abandoned Soviet army base outside of Cherkasy on the Kremenchug Reservoir.
What are three Russian atomic scientists doing in Ukraine?
Fair guess, they're building a bomb.
I mean, Nemirov has thousands of bombs. Why does he need to build a secret one?
Deniability. Build one nobody knows about. He could drive it to Chechnya in the trunk of his Beamer. No way to track it, no way to trace it. He could set it off and sit back and say, I didn't do it.
With all due respect, sir, I don't think that adds up.
It adds up. You just don't like what it adds up to.
A man in a hat and coat strides into the abandoned Soviet Army base, to an area that's been set apart within translucent screens. Inside this laboratory, the three Russian scientists work on a small device. Two are wearing breathing masks, while the third watches a few feet away. One man lifts a dark sphere just larger than a cricket ball.
Ah, the warmth of plutonium decay.
It's completely corroded. At least you're wearing gloves.
No, zirconium!
Got a light for an American cigarette?
Not me.
You're crazy. I'm going out.
Outside, someone is observing with a camera and a microphone.
First, we must analyze the yield. Spassky. Do we have a bomb? Yes. Yes, we do.
Ryan and Kathy are kissing lovingly.
Sure.
Hello? Yes.
Ryan glances back at Kathy with a serious expression.
Yes, sir. I have to go outside for just a second. Okay? I'll be right back. I'll be right back.
Kathy nods. Ryan runs across the dark street to a parked car and gets in. Kathy watches from the window.
Sir, I read reports.
I reviewed your military records, Jack. You can take care of yourself.
Yes, sir. I'm not trained for that.
I'm not asking you to be an operations officer, just my eyes and ears. I can't go.
So, this isn't sanctioned.
I want you to give this to Clark, see what he finds out. Bring it home.
Yes, sir.
A small square disc.
Jack? We never had this discussion.
What discussion?
Kremenchug Reservoir, Ukraine. A large boat is motoring across the night water.
Okay, Clark. So this is 3 days ago. It shows vehicles here, guards here, and here.
I gotta get one of those.
Now, the infrared satellite was in position 34 hours ago and took this photograph. That shows guards here, and here.
I don't even have email.
There are two more at the checkpoint, between 2 and 5 in the barracks, and 2 with the package, which we believe to be right here.
No problem. Give me a couple guys, a box of tranquilizer darts. If we're lucky, we can be out in 6 minutes.
Actually, there is a problem.
What's that?
Well, this is yesterday. No guards visible at all.
And why is that a problem, Mr. Ryan?
For two reasons. Either we can't see them, which is bad, or worse, they left, and we're too late.
Suit up.
What?
You can't go dressed like that.
No. I'm an analyst. I don't go on the missions.
Relax, 007. It's not a mission. It's just a recce.
Well, okay, fine. Whatever you call it. I don't do that. I just write reports.
Okay. So write a report about it. Suit up.
Clark, no. Clark. No.
Oh, Cabot tells me you got my ticket to the correspondence dinner. Have a good time? Never been to one of those. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it.
Clark drives the inflatable dinghy onto a snowy shoreline, and together they haul it up clear of the water. Clark grabs his bag and throws Ryan a pistol.
Clark.
What?
No, I'm not going in there.
Goddamn right you're not. You're gonna stay here and make sure no one steals my boat.
Be right back.
As Clark goes, Ryan cocks his pistol. Clark scuffs hurriedly through the snow and drops to the ground at the base of a wire fence. He takes a small pressurized canister from his bag and sprays a large square onto the wire. He hefts his bag onto his back and tugs hard at the wire fence. The portion within the square he sprayed comes loose. He goes through and runs quickly over the snowy ground. Clark's torchlight plays over a grimy brick wall, then disappears as he looks cautiously around the corner of a wall somewhere dank and dark. Staring at a figure in a room some way off, he raises his gun with a grim face and steps out from around the corner. He looks down and realizes he's treading on broken glass. He creeps forward, then looks ahead at the figure who's sitting stock still in the large window of a grimy, crudely lit room. He moves forward. Behind cover, Clark shines his bright torch straight at the motionless figure. It's one of the Russian scientists. He's been shot in the head. A truck is traveling slowly along a track. Ryan hears it and scrambles round to take a look. The two men from the truck have discovered the square hole in the fence. Ryan winces. The men leave, and Ryan makes a move. Clark steps into the room with the dead scientist and shines his torch on dogs tearing on the white bloody clothing of another corpse. The bright light frightens them away. Clark sees the third scientist lying dead, sprawled on his back over the edge of a table. He frowns at the carnage. A shallow dish of what seems to be small ball bearings lies on the floor, with some of the metal spheres scattered everywhere amongst technical components. Clark picks up a severed length of twisted red and black wire that was cut from the device the men were working on. He also notices a piece of crate with Israeli text, aerosol cans, and a portion of the floor spray-painted black. A large area is bare where the paint didn't reach. He steps up to the dead man on the table and snatches a credit card-sized radioactivity meter clipped to the man's lab coat. He opens the door to be confronted by the armed men from the truck.
Oh, God.
Immigration didn't call you guys, huh?
Ти що, падло, не розумієш української мови?
I'm sorry. You speak English? I don't speak much Ukrainian.
Рухайся! Що ти тут робиш?
Look, I know this doesn't look good, but it's not what you think. I'm an American citizen. I have my papers.
Рухайся! Стріляй!
Okay, no papers.
А на землю!
Please, just put the gun down, all right?
Кидай електрика!
Рухайся!
Електрика на землю!
Кидай електрика на землю! Кидай електрика на землю!
As he dazzles the startled men with his torch, Clark draws out his gun, then stands up slowly, aiming it.
Shoot him, Ryan. Shoot him.
Ryan's appeared behind the men.
Shoot him before he figures out what I'm saying.
The men instantly get to the ground.
Get their shoes.
What?
Tell them to take their shoes off.
Снимайте ботинки. Скидайте ботинки. Не бойся, тебе никто не тронет.
They obey.
You speak Ukrainian?
Yeah. You don't?
Back on the boat.
Whatever it is they were spray painting was big. About the size of a fridge. The imprint it left was pretty deep too, so we know three things for sure. It was heavy, something was radioactive, and now it's gone.
You said one of them spoke English?
South African.
Okay, so the question is, what's a South African doing in the Ukraine with three Russian scientists and a crate from Israel?
Clark smiles slightly and nods.
Tell Cabot I'm calling from Haifa.
I'm feeling you better hurry.
Most people believe the 20th century was defined by the death struggle of communism versus capitalism, and that fascism was but a hiccup. Today we know better. Communism was a fool's errand. The followers of Marx gone from this earth. But the followers of Hitler are bound and thrive. Hitler, however, had one great disadvantage. He lived in a time when fascism, like a virus, like the AIDS virus, needed a strong host in order to spread. Germany was that host, but strong as it was, Germany could not prevail. The world was too big. Fortunately, the world has changed. Global communications, cable TV, the internet. Today the world is smaller. And the virus does not need a strong host in order to spread. This virus is airborne. One more thing. Let no man call us crazy. They called Hitler crazy, but Hitler wasn't crazy. He was stupid. You don't fight Russia and America. You get Russia and America to fight each other and destroy each other.
A wall-mounted CCTV camera shows a pickup truck enter an underground compound with a fridge-sized crate loaded on the back. A man wheels a glass-fronted cigarette dispenser from the crate, places it beside two similar machines, and turns it on. Amongst the many brands on display, protruding from the bottom row is a red and black wire that disappears into the dispenser's casing. A small jet aircraft flies above a cloud bank.
So what'd you find?
Ukraine doesn't exactly have a thriving export economy, but it's online. I pulled up every shipping manifest for the past 2 weeks. The only crate the size of that imprint was picked up at Kiev International 10 days ago and flown to the Canary Islands.
Well, I can't find Cabot, so the Air Force has a nuclear assessment team.
Call them. Jack, it got put on a cargo freighter headed for the East Coast.
What?
Baltimore, Jack. It's coming here.
Drumsticks pounding a variety of skins and drums.
And it's another spectacular view from the Budweiser blimp as we count down to game time.
Can't wait for that. We'll have all the rest of the pregame festivities as well as the arrival of the nation's number one football fan in just a moment.
Police motorbikes escort the president's motorcade of sleek, stretched vehicles across a raised road network over a waterway in Baltimore. The American flag flaps from its position on President Fowler's vehicle. Cabot's in the back with him as he waves to onlookers.
All right, give me the duty officer.
Ryan sprinting across a landing strip from the jet. Fireworks explode above the stadium singer.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Robert Fowler.
Showtime.
With a wry smile, Fowler steps into a spotlight and enters the stadium. He points to silhouetted figures in the crowd and waves. Then holds both his hands up, all the time smiling pleasantly. Ryan's now on board a helicopter. He makes a call on a large phone. The Super Bowl gets underway with a series of crunching tackles and a completed pass. Immersed in the game, Cabot's oblivious to his ringing mobile phone on his belt. Another play sees the ball fumbled. The cigarette machine's position is underneath the stadium. As the crowd noise dims, Cabot hears his phone.
Hello. Hello.
Sir!
Hello.
Sir!
Cabot hangs up, a little bemused. Cheerleaders perform an end-of-quarter display. Cabot answers his phone again.
Yeah, Cabot. It's Ryan! What? The bomb is in play! Now it's called the AFRAT team! They're meeting me at the docks in 20 minutes! Let's see if we can find it!
Doc! What dock?
Dock!
Baltimore.
You're breaking out. What do you say?
Baltimore.
Look, I'm losing you. I'll call you back from the
Baltimore. Sir.
Mortified, Cabot stands up as the rest of the crowd in the Baltimore Stadium sits. A myriad of smiling faces, young and old, flash into chaos. Cabot regains composure and calls to security staff. They quickly escort the president away, much to the alarm of onlookers who get to their feet at the commotion.
Go!
Fowler's bustled down the stadium tunnel and into his waiting motorcade.
What the hell is going on?
Sir, please stay down.
Some Russian scientists have been working on a bomb. Nuclear. It arrived in Baltimore this morning.
Get those people out of the stadium.
Police escort spirits the president out of the stadium. Meanwhile, spectators and players alike are left utterly bemused. The city of Baltimore from the air.
Well, all we know is the president has been taken off.
Hey, Kathy.
That could mean anything.
Thanks,
he could be ill, he could be injured. We have no...
The shockwave of an almighty explosion rips through a hospital and across the city in seconds. It batters Ryan's helicopter in mid-air and tosses the president's motorcade like toy cars. Ryan holds on for dear life as his chopper plummets. It crashes into a bank of dust-covered debris and rolls down it. As winds buffet over the battered hulk of the aircraft, a dark and fiery cloud mushrooms into the sky. Two military choppers appear in the sky above the president's motorcade. Fowler and Cabot lie unconscious in their overturned vehicle. Smoke and dust continues to swirl around the wreckage as the choppers descend. They touch down near the road, and armed military personnel scramble into action. The rescue team moved to the other side of the president's vehicle and pries open a door. They help the bruised and bleeding president to his feet. He glances around, disorientated. While Fowler is helped back to a helicopter, the other Marines check for survivors.
Move it.
They pull Cabot's limp body out.
Got him.
The president's chopper scrambles into flight. Someone carrying a torch opens a door and heads into a bedroom where a couple are asleep.
Mr. President, there's been a nuclear explosion in America. You must come with us.
What?
We don't know who or how, but it wasn't us.
After Grozny, you hope it wasn't us.
We are drafting a strong denial for you.
And a statement of sympathy. And Yuri, order all military on the alert. Ryan comes to in the twisted wreckage of the chopper he was in. An eerie silence is carried amidst the smoke billowing around him. He frees his safety belt and falls heavily as the craft has come to rest on its side. After a moment, he pushes open a door and hauls himself out, sliding down the fuselage and again landing heavily on the ground. He gets unsteadily to his feet, cradling his ribs. Blinking dust from his eyes, he squints and surveys the devastation around him. His jaw drops at the sight of the ashen mushroom cloud climbing over the city in the distance, pushing back the natural clouds around it. He wanders despondently over to the exposed cockpit where the pilot lies dead in his seat, his face caked with blood. Hearing a radio signal, he reaches into the cockpit and alters a dial. The chopper carrying Fowler comes to land near the presidential aircraft that's being prepped for takeoff.
Hey, it's Ryan!
Jack, where are you?
I don't know, somewhere outside Baltimore.
Listen, Cabot got the president out.
Where's the president now?
They're taking him airborne. He's on NAOC.
Why?
They think it might be the Russians.
It wasn't the Russians. I gotta talk to Cabot. Can you pass me through to the plane?
Cabot's not on the plane.
We don't know where he is. We just know he's not there. Can you call back in about an hour?
We don't have an hour. Fowler's gonna want to show how tough he is. He's gonna hit back now.
Listen to me.
We have to prove that it wasn't the Russians before he's convinced it is.
Well, can you get back to Langley?
There's no time. There must be a command post on site. The radiation assessment team, where are they?
Stambler Tunnels, south of the city. Jack, listen, the prevailing winds are blowing the fallout to the east and the north. As long as you stay south, you're okay.
Brother, you all right?
Jesus, Gene, how the hell do you think I am? How many casualties?
We don't know.
Cabot said it was Russian. How the hell did it get in there?
We don't know. Radar didn't pick it up, so it wasn't a missile.
Well, how is Cabot? Where is he?
I don't know.
Well, what do you know?
I don't know, all right? I don't know.
All right.
I don't know, okay. For Christ's sake.
Fowler, Ravel, and some other besuited officials head up the steps into Air Force One.
General. Ryan and Condor are not on board.
The after team without the scene.
Yes, sir.
Crisis locally.
Mr. President, I recommend that we move to DEFCON.
No, I don't even know where that came from. Where's our intelligence?
Russian air defenses have moved to their highest level.
Well, maybe they're afraid of being attacked, and I can't get this goddamn chair to open.
Sir, Mr. DEFCON,
we're about to take off. No, we don't know who did it. We don't even know where we are.
The Russians are at highest alert.
Excuse me. You think?
Sir, DEFCON 2.
We're groping in the dark here, so it's a little.
This is too much goddamn bullshit.
Not enough fact.
The plane thunders along the runway and into the air.
The blast crater is about 100, maybe 150 yards wide, which suggests a relatively low yield device. Quite a bit smaller than, say, the Hiroshima bomb. Maybe a quarter of a square mile around the stadium is just gone. But beyond that, buildings do remain, although heavily.
Dressler's enjoying a sumptuous meal, but decides to make a phone call. A mustachioed man with receding hair sips a drink in his airbase office, then gets the phone.
Dubinin?
Herr Haft has left for America, and now we are counting on you.
I assure you, I will earn every penny.
Attention! You've heard of the bomb in America. What you haven't heard is that 15 minutes ago, an American ICBM hit Moscow. We shall retaliate. Our target is an American aircraft carrier in the North Sea. Man your aircraft. The military pilots hurry out into the cold, wintry night. A police car pulls to a halt. Ryan bursts out of it and rushes towards the disaster rescue headquarters. The bomb site glows in the distance.
The ash isn't where you're at, and the prevailing winds are blowing the fallout to sea.
Captain, Jack Ryan, CIA?
Lord Shiro, you need to wait outside with everybody else.
Oh, I don't think so. I need to know everything you know about the bomb.
Look, pal, we're collecting samples, then we have to analyze the debris. So take a number, get in line, and we'll have the report out tomorrow.
Captain, I don't have time for this. I need to know where this bomb came from. I will settle from where it didn't come from, but I need to know now. Otherwise, there may not be a tomorrow.
Wesson, where are you?
About a quarter mile from ground zero.
I think this is about as far as we go. I see the sizzling. And I'm getting ramped here at nearly the limit of our gear.
Okay, cut the rope and loosen and get the hell out of here.
Roger that.
Wesson signals to his colleagues and they all vacate the charred bomb site. A robot on caterpillar tracks trundles along.
Dylan, the crate the bomb was shipped in. Somebody had to sign for it when it got to port. Customs must have a database. Get me a name. And where's Captain?
No one knows. Checking the hospitals.
Have you tried Memorial?
He wouldn't be there. It's on the other side of
No, I mean, is it still... It's Kathy's hospital.
As far as I know, he's still there, but the phones are down.
All right, can you keep checking for me? Thanks.
On Air Force One...
Now, they could have launched a cruise missile. DSP sats might not have picked it up.
Now, just a minute. We don't know that this is Russia.
But we don't know it's not.
Look, if they were sending us a message like stay out of Chechnya, the whole point would be for us to know it was them, not to sneak one in.
Except that they could inspire the kind of dithering and confusion that we're going through right now.
Mr. President, we're uplinked.
President Nemiroff, a short time ago, there was a major nuclear event on the eastern seaboard of the United States. Loss of life is severe.
It was no accident.
It was not an accident.
We don't yet know where it came from.
We have not yet ascertained the source of this weapon. Rest assured.
We have not yet ascertained the source of this weapon. But rest assured, those responsible will be dealt with most severely.
He's fishing. Send our reply.
Whoa, that was a little fast.
Please accept the deepest sympathies of the Russian people. If it was deliberate, this is a crime without precedent. What madman would do such a thing, and for what purpose? You must believe that Russia had nothing to do with this infamous act.
It's canned. You prepared that in advance.
President Nemiroff, we have no reason to suspect Russian involvement at this time.
But we will protect ourselves from further aggression.
He thinks we did this.
We must demonstrate the strength of our weapons. They have to understand that attacking Russia would be suicide.
Increase the alert status. Dressler's man on the inside at the airbase slips into a car and drives away as the planes are preparing to take off in the snow. The US aircraft carrier powers through the North Sea at night.
EW, I'm picking up intermittent radar bearing 020. Where? Now it's gone.
39.
There. It's a weak signal. Low on the horizon.
TAO airstrip inbound contact.
The Russian fighter jet launch a series of missiles.
Multiples on the same bearing.
Vampire,
A missile tears through the control tower while another explodes below deck, leaving the massive ship stricken and aflame. On Air Force One.
That the missiles came from Russian aircraft, there is no question.
Grinnell thinks that he can save the ship, but flight ops are definitely out.
I ordered no such attack. Do not respond to it.
Until we investigate all possibilities.
Like you did in Chechnya? Mr. President, who is in control of your armed forces?
You dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. You dropped the bomb on Nagasaki. Do not
lecture me on Chechnya.
Mr. President, we are now at a de facto state of war with the Russians.
Look, John Clark was in Haifa yesterday. I don't know where he is today, but he may have something, so we have to find him right away.
Wow, check out that gadolinium reading.
Yeah, the mass fraction is huge. Okay, connect me to Dylan, will you? I'll hold.
There it is. Savannah River.
Oh, yeah, what? They always have that gadolinium problem. Hanford does it another way. They always generate too much promethium. Hold on a second. Can you translate that into English for me?
This plutonium came from the DOE planet Savannah River. February of 68 from K-reactor. You can even tell which part of K-reactor.
Wait a minute. This is our plutonium?
Made in the USA.
Dylan, you gotta find Cabot for me.
Are you advocating we launch a first strike?
It is not a first strike! There's already been a first strike! And a second! Don't you get it?
No, I don't get it! I don't understand why we have to nuke them, for God's sake! It's not reasonable!
Sydney! God damn it! We practically sank an aircraft carrier! Their missile silos are hot. We're getting nothing but bullshit from Nemiroff. And let's not forget how this thing started, okay? They tried to kill me, remember? And don't fucking tell me to be reasonable!
Ryan leaves a military transport and hurries through crowds of people towards a large warehouse-type building that's a hive of activity. He scans the crowds with an air of desperation, then pauses to talk to a search and rescue official. The man points him in the right direction and he heads into a makeshift medical treatment center. His grim expression falters as he finds the patient he's been looking for. He struggles to speak.
Sir. Sir.
Hey.
Cabot opens his eyes and mumbles.
President.
President's fine. He's fine.
Sir.
The bomb. The plutonium. Your wife. I'm sure she's fine. She's in D.C. The blast radius, wasn't that wide?
Ryan uses his jacket to cover Cabot.
Sir, now listen to me. The plutonium was ours. John Clark's in Haifa right now, trying to track down the arms dealer. I can't get a hold of him. And I don't know what to do. She works in Baltimore, so I don't know.
Spedica.
Sir. No.
Ryan's eyes glisten and he hangs his head somberly. He stands up and sighs. The right side of his face bears the wounds of his crash. He clenches his jaw and suddenly notices the late Cabot's possessions in a clear bag nearby. He picks them up and quickly leaves.
Yeah, Jack just got in. We found the receiver address for the crate.
Okay. Yeah, Port of Baltimore. Can you get to the docks?
Yeah. Find the Transcon warehouse. The name on the manifest is Mason.
Sorry, I need this truck.
Ryan shoves the man aside and speeds away in the vehicle. He tears along a road strewn with burning wreckage. He reads a message from Spinnaker on Cabot's PDA. Nemirov furious. Coup possible. US must back down. Swerving to avoid a fire truck, Ryan hits a stationary vehicle and plows into a shop front. Flames erupt around him as he shifts gear and tries the engine again. Then he decides to reply to Spinnaker's message. Taking out the PDA touchscreen pen, he begins composing a message. Cabot dead. This is Ryan. Our plutonium stolen 1968. Where did it go? Now he tries the engine again. He reads Spinnaker's response on the PDA, Israel. And questions, Israel stole it? To which Spinnaker replies, no, you did, and gave it to them. The furrows on Ryan's brow deepen. As he tries to abandon his stricken truck, he discovers the door is jammed and the flames outside are getting worse. He manages to shoulder open the door and limps away along a burning street, hunching down amid the smoldering ruins around him. Air Force One's refueling in flight. On board, Fowler's cogitating.
Sir, we've come up with another alternative.
Go counterforce. A conventional attack on the Russian airbase where the carrier attack originated.
It's what we're looking for. Measured response.
Non-nuclear.
Is it strong enough? Smart bombs and F-16s. Pretty goddamn strong.
Can't afford for them to see us as weak. They've got to know we have the guts to take it to the next level.
I think they'll get that message.
Hit him.
Secretary of State Sidney Owens hangs his head. Three US jets scream through the air above a thick blanket of cloud. A volley of missiles drop from the aircraft and a series of military targets are shown exploding in grainy black and white surveillance footage.
To make no response is to invite greater attack.
Just received, sir. American submarines from Norfolk and Kings Bay are putting to sea.
They're carrying Trident D3 missiles, a first strike weapon.
Fowler's not so insane as to launch a first strike.
Maybe he thinks it's not the first.
Once their stealth bombs go up, we'll have no choice. That will be the sign.
How do we convince him not to launch his bombers?
Maybe we should
bring our missiles to highest alert. They'd be crazy to attack then.
Everyone, can I have your attention, please? The generator has gone out. I don't want anyone to move because there's too much broken glass everywhere. Just stay where you are. We will get back to you. Good. Okay, fine. Please, stay where you are. We're going to get you one by one.
A host of wounded people litter the floor of a bomb-damaged hospital. Grubby and haggard, Kathy moves amongst them.
Sir, can you hear me? Can you feel your arms and legs?
9% IV and a morphine trip, okay?
Sir, we're gonna take care of you, right?
What do you got? What do we do with the ones we know won't make it? Whatever we can.
Fowler to Revel.
What? Bill Cabot died. I'm really sorry.
This can't be happening.
Fowler walked through the shaking cabin. Sitting at the plane's conference table, Defense Secretary Becker looks pained and sits back in his seat as a uniformed man approaches him.
Sir, we have a call from Langley.
Thank you.
Becker!
This is Jack Ryan from the Russian Network!
Oh, great, the Nemiroff apologist.
Sir, this bomb was not Nemiroff. I know this guy.
That's what you said after Grozny, Mr. Ryan. Put it in your report.
The plutonium came from...
Becker hangs up. Clark's driving through a desert region with a bearded man.
Seems unusual to find radiation poisoning all the way out here.
I have never myself seen such a thing. That is why we published the case on the internet. To seek help.
How did he say it happened?
He will not talk about it.
Soon, Clark's by Gazi's bedside in a tent.
Was anyone else exposed to the materials that made you sick?
Pale and sweating, Ghazi stares up at him with sunken eyes.
Mr. Ghazi, I'm not the police. I'm a physician. I assure you that anything you say to me stays between us.
Ghazi fingers some beads he's holding.
My friend and I find bomb. We sell. Too many buy such things.
A photograph of Olson.
Was it this man?
Ghazi looks at it, then looks away again.
Other people may have come in contact with that bomb.
We must help them. Ghazi looks at him, making a decision.
I am going to die. Yes.
Clark nods.
Yes.
Ghazi stares off again, coming to terms with this.
His name is Olson. He lives in Damascus.
In a spacious, well-furnished room, a computer is buzzing to itself. Ryan's colleague, Rudy.
Oh yeah, we're getting it all.
A nuclear strike on Colorado Springs would take out NORAD. It would limit their ability to launch a counterattack.
How many people live in Colorado Springs?
300,000 to 400,000.
Mr. President, to use nuclear weapons against the Americans would be to cross a threshold. They think we already have. So now we wait for them to annihilate us?
I cannot stop what I did not start.
Mr. President, we need you to initiate snap count.
What happens then?
We prepare to take out their land-based missiles with a massive nuclear strike. Find and kill their subs. Knock out whatever planes they have on the ground, and mobilize our fighters to destroy the ones they already have in the air.
What are our chances? David? Odds are, we leave Nemiroff in a pretty pickle.
He'll be left with, at best, a few hundred nukes.
The ones we can't find. Mostly the smaller, more mobile, less accurate kind.
All he can do with those is target our cities.
But he knows to an absolute certainty that we will respond against his cities.
Fowler removes his glasses as he takes this in.
I spent my entire adult life wanting to be president. This is my presidency.
Sir, I believe he'll keep his 300 nukes. It's still a credible deterrent against some future aggressor. I think he'll push back from the table and call it a night.
I'm giving the order for snap count. Maximum readiness.
In a launch silo, a missile is prepared.
Jack, we're in Olsen's files. He shows wire payments of $45 million from someone named Dressler.
Dylan, go run Dressler, find out who he is. Jack, I really want you out of there.
Okay, I'm at the docks. I think there's somebody inside.
See if the name Dressler's anywhere.
No, Jack, get out of there. Dylan, call the Baltimore PD, give him the address. Hurry. Jack, wait for the cops.
Okay, man.
Cautiously, Ryan goes through a door and walks through to the clothing storage area. Ryan creeps through the place. It's dark, with many chains hanging from the ceiling and attached to metal support poles running horizontally. Just as he looks up to see Mason hanging lifeless from a chain, Haft throws a chain around Ryan's neck and begins to strangle him. Ryan struggles, throwing his weight about, but Haft only tightens his grip. In a final, desperate move, Ryan puts all his strength into kicking against a post, hurling them both backwards onto a table, breaking it. Ryan elbows Haft in the face and breaks free from the chain. Haft smashes Ryan to the floor with a powerful blow. Ryan kicks him in the legs, but Haft hits Ryan again. Ryan stumbles away and grabs a metal tool from a table. He repeatedly smashes Haft in the face with it, then wraps a chain around his neck.
Who's dressed?
Police cars.
Where is he, goddammit? Where's Dressler?
Are you Ryan?
Where's Dressler?
Are you Jack Ryan?
Where's Dressler? Where's Dressler? God damn it!
Let him go!
Where's Dressler? Where is he?
Langley said you might need some help.
I gotta get to the Pentagon.
I think I can help you with that.
A stealth bomber takes off, joining two others already airborne. In the Russian command center.
Mr. President, their stealth bombers have left Aviano in Italy. That is the sign.
Shoot them down. God protect us.
Mr. President, the Russians are scrambling their fighters. We are out of time.
Becker collapses.
Dave!
He has a heart condition.
Get a doctor in here.
David?
Mr. President.
Dave, where's your nitro?
I said get a doctor in
here!
Mr. President!
Dave, do you have your medication?
I'm taking the
right. Yes, sir.
Colonel, bring the launch codes.
An officer is carrying a heavy briefcase to Nemirov. He opens it, and Nemirov eyes the computer screen and keyboard inside with anxiety.
Father was executed at Nuremberg. 5 years ago, he bought himself a seat in Parliament. Then he got booted out for saying nice things about the Nazis.
Rudy, you gotta get me through to the president.
I can't do it, Jack.
Come on, get me through.
They're in the snap count, Jack. There's no way in.
Bullshit!
A stealth bomber banks through clouds. Ryan's helicopter lands by the Pentagon and he leaps out, breaking into a run. He stops at the security barrier at the entrance. He's using Cabot's pass, which won't work, and a guard on the other side of the barrier, suspicious of Ryan's disheveled appearance, approaches.
I can do that for you, sir.
No, it's fine. I got it. It's fine. Got some dirt on the card. It's happening.
I see that card, sir.
No, it's
not. Alert.
I understand.
Sir, put the card down, please, and take a step
back. Off. You understand?
I am ordering you.
Hold on a second. Back off.
Take a step back now. I am ordering you to take a step back immediately, sir.
The barrier opens, and Ryan rushes past the guard. He runs down a corridor.
General, there's a Dr. Ryan from the CIA. He wants to enter NMCC. He's unescorted, sir.
What's he want?
You, sir.
Sir, my name is Jack Ryan. I have an urgent message from Director Cabot that I need to transmit over the hotline immediately.
What's your authorization?
I don't have an authorization.
Well, then where's Cabot?
Cabot's dead, sir. I just need to get this information sent, please.
Not without authorization, you don't. Get him out of here.
What? Wait a minute! General, the president is basing his decisions on some really bad information right now. And if you shut me out, your family and my family and 25 million other families will be dead in 30 minutes.
The general returns to face Ryan.
My orders are to get the right information to the people who make the decisions. I just need to send some information.
What makes you think the president will even listen to you?
He doesn't have to.
How close are the bombers?
They're slipping in and out of radar over Poland.
Nemirov stares at the briefcase device. Activate the missile regiments. Two ICBMs are raised to an upright position on their mobile carriers.
You have about a minute for the launch sequence to process after you give the order. Before the order can be taken, an ID check must be performed.
Fowler searches for his code card.
Mine is the, my number is the third one, third number down from the top.
Your order, sir.
Strike.
I'm sorry, sir.
I give the order to strike it.
Under the two-man rule, the order to strike must now be confirmed.
For the love of God, just do it.
Sidney Owen, Secretary of State, is the fourth number down.
An officer swipes the card and enters the code number into the machine.
The order to strike has now been confirmed by the two-man rule.
NMCC, this is Lassiter. Strike order has been confirmed. Start the sequence.
We've got activity on the hotline.
They've had their chance.
No, no, somebody's talking to the Kremlin.
Terrorist attack on America.
As you can imagine, there has been much confusion here and fear. But we know the weapon was not Russian.
But we know the weapon was not Russian. Repeat, we know the weapon was not Russian.
What the hell is going on?
Goodbye. Thanks, sir.
Type exactly what I say.
Who are we talking to?
Ryan, I met you in Moscow with Bill Cabot. Died today in Baltimore.
Cut him off.
We can't.
Launch sequence has begun.
2 months ago, a neo-fascist named Dressler bought an A-bomb on the black market.
Cut him off!
The system is set up so you can't cut it off. That's the whole idea.
Then get somebody down there to stop him.
He paid three disaffected Russian scientists to make the bomb active. He shipped it to the U.S., where a man named Mason was hired to deliver the bomb to the target and set our countries on a collision course.
This is madness. He's from the CIA.
We cannot hang our fate on the word of their spy.
What's the harm of listening a bit more?
What are you asking of me?
Ryan stands up as he considers his response.
Back down.
Astavanichis.
What guarantee do I have that President Fowler will follow suit?
None.
None. You see? He's wasting time.
We must launch this minute.
Sir, I know you. I know you had nothing to do with the Baltimore bomb, and you sure as hell know you didn't. But you're still about to launch a nuclear strike against us.
Yes,
this
sir.
No longer has anything to do with Baltimore. Now it's
That's
about
all,
fear.
Dr. Ryan.
Our fear
Stop
of your
typing.
Missiles, your fear of our subs.
Move away
fear
from the keyboard.
Fear of being weak, fear of making a mistake.
Sergeant, move
Same
away from the keyboard.
Fear of the other guy that has built these goddamn bombs in the first place.
It stopped.
Ivo Pirvali.
They've cut him off.
Right, they're going to strike.
Prepare the launch orders now.
Nemirov stares at the screen. On Air Force One.
30 seconds to launch.
Oh my God. Mr. President?
On a screen. On my order, Russian strategic forces are standing down.
We will maintain our defensive alert for the moment, but our offensive forces are withdrawn.
If you match our move, I propose a phased mutual stand down over the next 5 hours.
Stop the launch sequence.
Lassiter here. Flash override. Stop the sequence. Stop the sequence.
Order the planes to stand down. Take us to DEFCON 3. And would somebody ask Mr. Ryan if I can use the phone now?
At the Pentagon, Ryan raises his head wearily. Now, Kathy's holding a cup of coffee as she sits in a room at the hospital. Ryan appears at the doorway. Still slightly bloodied and dirty from the explosion, looks up at him.
You're still here.
They embrace warmly. At the Kremlin, Ryan joins an audience in giving Nemirov and Fowler a standing ovation as they enter a public conference room together. The two presidents sit. Olsen conducts the CD music with one hand, his eyes closed in bliss, relaxing in a dressing gown. Documents are placed in front of the two presidents on the long table, and each sign. Olsen continues to conduct, eyes closed. With gloved hands, Clark grabs his mouth and slashes his throat with a knife. Nemirov sits looking thoughtful as some of the documents are collected. One of Dressler's associates is panicked. He's being chased through snow and trees by gunmen. He trips over in the thick snow. He turns over and begins to plead frantically with the two gunmen, who fire into him repeatedly with pistols. Nemirov continues signing. Dressler hurries out of a building's entrance but stops, looking uncertain, as an associate rushes to a car in the snowy street and gets in. Dressler watches anxiously as his associate turns the key in the ignition. As Nemirov continues signing, the man puffs his cheeks with relief as the engine starts. Dressler hurries over to the car with a large bag, and his associate holds the door open for him to get in. Inside, Dressler takes out a cigarette. He puts it between his lips, opens a flap to reveal the car's lighter, but then pauses worriedly. He presses the lighter anyway. The tremendous explosion throws flames and debris into the air, and a raging fire consumes the wreckage. Grishkov watches pensively from an upstairs window in the building. He puts on a flat cap and leaves. The two presidents rise from their chairs and shake hands as cameras flash.
There is no more fitting memorial for those who perished in this tragedy than the steps we have taken this week.
Toward a multinational campaign to root out and eliminate weapons of mass destruction.
In a park opposite the White House lawn, Grishkov approaches Ryan, who's picnicking with Kathy.
If the most powerful weapons ever created are unleashed, it will be fired not in anger, but in fear.
Dr. Ryan.
Mr. Grishkov.
It is a lovely day.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. This is
Dr. Muller. How do you do?
Nice to meet you.
Why am I not surprised that you know her name?
Our friend William thought I was a spy. Of course, he could never prove it.
He never told me you were friends.
Perhaps he didn't know you well enough.
Cabot did tell me he had a source in Russia.
To keep the back channels open.
In hopes of staving off disaster.
President Kennedy said, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's future. And we are all mortal.
I will miss so very much talking to William.
Me too.
Perhaps from time to time, you and I can talk.
Yeah, I'd like that.
A small box.
What is this?
A modest gift for your engagement.
He just asked me this morning.
We haven't told anybody about. How could you possibly know?
Grishkov shrugs with a contented smile, then turns and walks away.